This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Of the nearly 2 million people incarcerated in the United States at any given time, more than 500,000 are held in local jails. And a majority of those are being held before trial, which means they're innocent until proven guilty. The decision makers with most power to determine who's jailed and who isn't are local judges, usually elected, but often operating without much accountability. Now there's a growing effort toward judicial accountability led by the abolitionist organization La Defensa in Los Angeles. Joining me right now is its co-founder and executive director, Yvette Allais. Yvette describes themselves as a queer femme and formerly undocumented person who has been organizing and leading anti-carceral campaigns in California for nearly a decade. They have helped to found and lead multiple coalitions, including Justice LA and Reimagine LA, supporting historic victories such as ending LA County's $3.5 billion jail expansion plan in 2019 and passing Measure J in 2020. They previously served as policy director at Dignity and Power Now and was a statewide coordinator at Californians United for a Responsible Budget. Yvette's new op-ed at Yes Magazine is called Judging the Judges. And as the racial justice editor at Yes, I was their editor. Yvette, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me today.
So first, let's talk about the fact that there is this huge number of people, not just in LA, but around the country, that are jailed before they even begin trial. Generally, when somebody is arrested, before they are tried and they might get convicted or they might go free, it's up to a judge to decide whether or not they need to remain in jail and remain incarcerated or not. Why are there so many people who are jailed and these are people who are considered innocent until proven guilty?
You know, that is a great question, Sonali. Like you shared, such a huge swath of the people incarcerated in our jails haven't been convicted yet. And there are two primary mechanisms in which people are detained. And one is the use of money bail. So a judge sets bail. They can either provide a bail amount that a person has to pay in order to buy their freedom, or they can just choose to preventatively detain someone. And so what that means is that the judge doesn't feel that that person will be returning to court for a future court date. And so those that have wealth are able to buy their freedom through the process of bail. And those that don't have wealth have to remain incarcerated for weeks, months, or even years until they have their day in court. And so the money bail process, we know, is inherently racist and classist. Those that have wealth, predominantly those that have generational wealth, that have access to wealth, often are folks with privilege, white folks, folks that have had that type of wealth. But when we talk about those most impacted by incarceration, predominantly communities of color, immigrant communities, folks without wealth, they remain incarcerated and can lose their jobs, lose custody of their children, lose their homes. So the ramifications of being incarcerated when you are legally innocent are vast. But there's another mechanism that I mentioned, preventative detention. And so a judge has the option to just say, you know what, I'm going to detain this person. I'm not going to set bail for them. And we saw that really come to rise in the 80s at the federal level with the Bail Reform Act of 1984, which really propelled the use of preventative detention. And so at the federal level, though you don't use money bail, the judge can decide, we're going to detain you. And what's often the motivator for a judge is that they don't want to be responsible if a person is released and then commits harm in the communities. From the judge's perspective, they don't want the person being rearrested for something or accused, and then their name, the judge's name, their face is splashed in the front of the New York Times or the LA Times as being responsible. But the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of people that are allowed to defend themselves from a position of freedom are actually able to successfully fight their cases. And so this fear that judges have and the power that they have to detain people without a conviction has really propelled the increases of our jail populations nationwide.
So there has been a bail reform movement, as you write about, and in California in particular, there was the passage of the Humphrey legal decision. Tell me about this and why it wasn't enough.
Yeah. So the basis of Humphrey is that courts and judges must consider someone's ability to pay when setting bail. So if someone, for example, is unemployed, if they are houseless, their ability to pay may very well be zero. And what we've seen in practice here in LA County, and I assume is also a practice that's happening not just here in our county, but across the state and across the country, is that judges will sometimes give bail of a dollar. And even that dollar is too much for someone that is unemployed and houseless to pay. And we've seen instances where the public defender that's assigned to their case will, you know, try to pay that dollar bail. That is so indicative of the way that the judicial system works. It will set bail at completely unaffordable rates, even though Humphrey says that bail must be set at affordable rates. Judges are not applying Humphrey. In fact, they are completely practicing illegal acts in the courtroom by not applying Humphrey. And there's currently a lawsuit. The Civil Rights Corps has sued LA County and the LA Superior Court for not implementing Humphrey. So we could see laws being passed, but by and large, judges are unaccountable. There are very little mechanisms to hold judges accountable. You know, you mentioned at the top that judges can be elected, but most people don't know that judges can be elected or are not informed about judicial elections or who these candidates are. So the one mechanism that we have, or one of the very few mechanisms that we have, which are elections, are insufficient at the moment because people don't know about them and people are not informed about what happens in the courtroom. Right. And so what we see is that judges can basically act independently.
And that becomes oftentimes the part of one's ballot that that people tend to leave blank, or they scramble last minute. They try to dig around online to see if they can find any information, because judges don't get that much media attention. They might have a very simple campaign website, but that's their version of what they want the world to know. And it's usually platitudes or generalities. And so then let's talk about the tool that your organization, La Defensa, created to give people who are voters a chance at getting some accurate information on judges, and also just apply pressure in general to judges. You liken it in your article for Yes as a Yelp for judges. Tell me about this review tool.
Yes, it's called Rate My Judge. And like you mentioned, it's like a Yelp for judges. So we rely on community reviews from folks that go into the courtroom that either have their day in court or are a family member of someone that's going inside. Also public defenders, court interpreters, whoever's in the courtroom is able to go onto our website and leave a review for a judge and judge them on everything from how much they followed the law to their decorum, whether they were fair. And these reviews help paint a picture about how a judge is behaving in the courtroom. We're actually expanding the site with our upcoming Court Watch program to really integrate additional data around the implementation of the Humphrey decision, for example. to make sure that we provide voters and the community with a full picture on judicial behavior. And this full picture helps inform what judges folks want to vote for. If a judge goes to Harvard or prestigious school, that doesn't give me information around how they're treating my community, which is basically a lot of the information that we are able to find on judges is, you know, where they used to practice law. The vast majority of judges are former district attorneys. And so they're former prosecutors that are on the bench that come from a prosecutorial background and have a lens of conviction, which is really a motivator for prosecutors, is how many folks that they can convict. And so that's the culture of the bench. It comes from a law enforcement background. But when we're able to diversify the bench, when we're able to make judicial races competitive, when we're having diversity on the bench, more women, more people of color, more folks from a public defense background, then we're able to really shift the ways and the approach of the bench and how they're actually treating our community members, in addition to exposing them through our Rate My Judge tool.
And we'll get very shortly to one of those new people that has just been elected. But going back to the Rate My Judge tool, is it primarily people who have personally had experience with the judge that they might be rating, maybe, you know, being the person under trial, or is it family members or, you know, part of the friend social network of the person who's come there to do community support, or all of the above?
It's all of the above. So our site is completely anonymous. So part of the protections for individuals, especially if they're in current cases that are ongoing, we want to make sure to protect their anonymity. So all of our reviews are anonymous, but the reviews reflect folks that engage with the courts. And so you will see reviews from public defenders who are in the courts day in, day out. We have reviews from community members who are facing charges or from their loved ones. We have reviews from court interpreters that are in the court and watching the behavior of judges. And so we have eyes and ears through all vehicles and all community members that are in the courtroom. And with our new court watch program that we're integrating, we'll be able to include other community members that are able to just sit and observe and gather more information.
So that's firsthand knowledge of how the judges behave in the courtroom. And that website, by the way, is ratemyjudge.la. So if you're watching or listening, if you've ever been, if you've ever had an experience in an LA courtroom and want to speak out either about a judge you thought was incredibly unfair or one that was imminently fair, people can go and rate that judge if they're still actually operating. So let's talk about how we need to change the face of the judiciary itself. You write in your story for Yes Magazine about Holly Hancock, and who basically started out as a public defender and who has now been elected to LA County Superior Court. I wasn't aware that public defenders very rarely actually make it into those positions. Tell me about Hancock.
Yeah, so Holly Hancock was part of the Defenders of Justice. So in 2022, La Defensa launched a PAC. So we knew we didn't just want to expose judges. We wanted to help transform the judiciary and insert folks that have experience in public defense, in civil rights, to actually take to the bench. And we created a coalition, the Transforming the Judiciary Coalition, with other partners to help identify who could be a good candidate, who would be willing to take the risk, who has alignment in values and could support alternatives to incarceration and diversion, rather than just leaning into a prosecutorial approach to the bench. And through that process, we identified four amazing candidates, one of which was Holly Hancock, who had a deep history of support from the community. She had actually run before. She had run before in the last cycle, but lost. And what we wanted to do in this last cycle, was create a community of support so that those that are running for the bench don't have to do it alone. and that they know that the community can be behind them. And that was the Defenders of Justice, four amazing women that were either civil rights attorneys or public defenders that ran for office. And Holly Hancock, with her experience having run before, with her experience as a successful public defender, defending our community members, really rose to the top and won her election. And we're incredibly proud of her. She is the first Black woman public defender to ever be elected to the LA Superior Court, which is historic.
So now we are at this position where you've made some headway via your organization, La Defensa, to rate the judges, to run judges. You mentioned those courtroom watch as well that you're integrating. Do you see this as part of an abolitionist approach to criminal justice in general? And if so, how? Because your organization, La Defensa, identifies as an abolitionist organization.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so for us, abolition is not just abolishing brick and mortar homes of incarceration, like jails and prisons. Abolition is not just law enforcement cops, but law enforcement takes many forms. It takes the form of probation officers that surveil our communities. It takes the form of district attorneys, which prosecute our communities. And it takes the form of judges who ultimately convict and incarcerate our community members. And so for us, judicial accountability is part of our steps to abolition, because we're exposing the behavior of judges and exposing them as an actor in the prison industrial complex, an actor that doesn't get a lot of attention and that is actually one of the most unaccountable actors within the system, because they act as a separate branch of government, have the ability to incarcerate our folks with impunity, are not even following the law when we're talking about the issue of pretrial incarceration in Humphrey, for example. And so we wanted to expose. That's one step. We also wanted to do harm reduction. And harm reduction is being able to replace judges and take seats that would otherwise be held by those that were former prosecutors. We wanted to insert more diversity, but not just diversity in terms of gender and race diversity. We want to include diversity of legal background, because diversity of legal background helps shift the culture as well as other forms of diversity, but is actually more of an indicator of alignment with our values. So for example, if we have a Latina woman who's a former prosecutor, she may include more diversity in the bench, but that doesn't necessarily shift the needle in terms of how often our community members are prosecuted and convicted. And so in order to have real transformation, we need to have diversity of thought and diversity of legal background. And it's a harm reduction measure. Ultimately, the judiciary is not the right vehicle for accountability. We cannot depend on a single person to be deciding whether our community members should be incarcerated when they haven't been convicted. It is incredibly powerful that we have given up our power to judges for so long, and now we're taking steps to take back that power. Part of the road to stripping the judiciary of power is also legal action, like we're seeing with civil rights court and forcing the courts to apply Humphrey. It's policy changes to strip the judiciary of power. That's all towards abolition, stripping the system of power and diverting resources to what should be our vehicles of accountability, which are community-based models of accountability that actually take someone's needs into consideration, someone's strengths into consideration, in order to address the root causes of harm, rather than just putting a Band-Aid on the problem and shutting someone in a jail cell.
Finally, Yvette, how can your work here in Los Angeles be replicated elsewhere? Or maybe it is already being replicated. I'm wondering, we didn't really get to putting your work into a national context in your op-ed for Yes, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on seeing this kind of work, which is being done on multiple fronts here in LA, how can it be expanded to the rest of the country?
Yes, I'm glad you asked, because we are part of a national movement. What we're seeing in places like Harris County, Texas, like in New York, where community members are actually exposing data around judicial behavior. In New York, there is a nonprofit organization called Scrutinize, which is creating a rating system for judges using data on judicial behavior to rate how carceral a judge is. We're seeing folks that are progressive and abolitionists run for judicial office. We saw Frank Bynum in Texas run for office and win. We're seeing progressive women in Nevada and in the Bay Area of California running for office and winning. And so we're seeing more progressive folks and abolitionist folks throw their hat in the ring for judicial office and being successful. And we're also seeing community members exposing judicial behavior and creating alternatives. So we're also seeing folks like Silicon Valley Debug here in California creating a system of participatory defense to engage the community and support a community member when they have their day in court. And so we're seeing community really rise up, the Bail Project as well, supporting folks with money bail, helping folks get released and then connecting them to services, which we know are actually more effective than just incarcerating someone, which disrupts their family and their community. Just providing services and support so they can return to court is vastly more effective in the long run in the health and wellness of that individual and their families and communities.
Well, Yvette, thank you so much for joining us. Give out a website for La Defensa.
Yes, ladefensa.org. Please visit us, and you can check us out on social media at La Defense X on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And we'll post links to those from our website again. Thank you so much, Yvette. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Yvette Ale is co-founder and executive director of La Defensa and wrote the new op-ed, Judging the Judges, at Yes Magazine. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.